Have you ever wanted to pretend to be a wizard? Well, this might sound a little goofy, and well, it is, because in today's episode of the RPG Goblin, we are talking about a game called Definitely Wizards. Definitely Wizards is an indie RPG that's only like 14 pages long, and it's all about going through a wizarding exam pretending to be wizards. And you have the looming threat of not getting caught as you go through these chambers, and you have to ace the exam or you're gonna go to wizard jail. This game is amazing, probably one of my favorites, and I brought on Odin today to talk about it, as they have actually made a module for Definitely Wizards. This module is on Odin's Itch page, and if you want to check it out, it is under the same name they use for their social media, which will be in the description below. Alright, now that we have all of that covered, let's get into it. Hello everyone, welcome to the RPG Goblin. I am Willow, the host, and today we are going to be talking about, I think, one of my favorite indie RPGs that I have found so far. It is absolutely adorable, and it is called Definitely Wizards. And by that name, I'm sure that you can guess that it's definitely going to be about wizards, for sure. And today's episode, I brought on Odin again to talk about Definitely Wizards, and if you would like to introduce yourself.
Yeah, hello. My name is Odin. I run a small publishing press called Susurret Press. That is Susurrate Press. Mm-hmm. I publish zines and books, and I also just bind books, and I'm currently working on starting to publish more TTRPG-related stuff. And I also have a book that is now officially out. It came out March 18th, called Finding Fernbow. And it is a middle grade novel about a little crow going on an adventure. So you can check that out on my website, which you can find through all my social media, which is just Susurret Press on all platforms.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Odin's social media name will be in the description of this episode as well, if you want to find it easier that way. But yeah, I'm very excited about all the things that you are doing with projects and your book. I'm so excited. So many fun things. But today's episode, we are going to be talking about Definitely Wizards, which is actually something that you have done a project with so far, correct?
Yes, I wrote a module that was originally for my Patreon members, my patrons, but it is now available on my Itch as well.
Perfect. And that is the same as all of your other social media handles, yes, as well, the name? Okay, perfect. So, Definitely Wizards is a great game. It's a mini RPG, maybe about, I think, like 14 pages at most. It's very small and the rules are very simple. And it's basically you are playing as characters who are taking a wizard exam to get your certificate for like casting magic. Because apparently the wizards need to be able to have the certificate to actually cast magic, because no one else can cast it except for wizards. And you are going through this exam. However, the one issue is the fact that you are not playing as wizards. Correct?
Correct, yes.
Instead, you are playing as people who can do different forms of magic casting, or people that are just kind of normal people, or a vampire as well. And you have to go through this exam and basically fake it till you make it and not get caught, or else you're going to get arrested. And that is just the funniest plot that I've ever heard for a TTRPG. And that's why it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it is a super loose and fast game that lets you really sort of choose what you want to make it about when it comes to actually like running the adventure. And it's just a great little exercise in creativity that you can play with your party.
Absolutely. like Odin said, very loose on the rules and very loose on what you can and can't do. And if you would actually like to talk about what, in the game, what is the exam?
Yeah, the exam is sort of the foundation of how you run this game. So there's, I believe, three or four obstacles, basically, that you need to go through that bring you through an exam that can be structured however you want it to be, but that challenges the players to use all of the different types of magic that they have to get through a series of problems. There are like two main types of magic, and similar to things like D&D, there are a bunch of different like types of magic that you can be playing with. But it gives you a lot of flexibility. So the exam is, four chambers, and they have like increasingly difficult challenges that you can either make up yourself, or the rule book has a bunch of, I think, six examples for each room that you can use. And you can roll for them, or you can just pick it out of whatever you want. And the players get to figure out these puzzles as they go.
Yeah, and that's the main, like, objective around this game, is completing this exam, going through the chambers, trying to not get caught. And it's actually perfect. It's so perfect for one-shot games. It is a fantastic game for that. But like you mentioned, there are, like, the different sorts of magic. There is the normal, quote-unquote, wizarding magic. It's like, you know, simple spells and such, and it gets more advanced if you're actually a wizard, but you're not one, so you only get basic spells. And then there's other magic that basically has to do with your class, which there are some really amazing class example or classes in this game, and they even have it open that you can create your own, but the base ones are so fantastic with how they are. I'm going to share one of my favorites first, then you can as well. One of my favorites is the vampire class. You are a blood-sucking creature of the night, anywhere on the spectrum from sparkly to full Dracula. And basically, the magic that you can do is all based on being a vampire. So it can be turning into a bat, draining life force, sparkling, all kinds of things like that. Anything that you can really think of that could be related to being a vampire, which is, again, very open to however you are going to interpret these things, which I absolutely love. And I just love the vampire class. I just think it's my favorite.
Yeah, it's just so fun. And it gives you so much room to play with it. Like the one that I was going to bring up is the 2d6 familiars in a trench coat. So you roll 2d6s, and you are that many owls, cats, toads, whatever sort of magic adjacent creature that you want to be in a jacket. How did you even get here, is what it says in the book. And your spells are determined by like what kind of creature you are, but they can include sort of anything that you want. So like flight as an owl, or catching mice as a cat, anything that makes sense for a critter with a little power.
Hey everyone, it is time for the midpoint break in today's episode. I really hope that you are enjoying it so far. If you are, please make sure to follow the RPG Goblin wherever you listen to your podcast, so that you can be reminded whenever there is a new episode, which comes out weekly. And if you haven't yet, please make sure to give the RPG Goblin a rating wherever you listen to it. It really helps other people know that you're enjoying the show, and it just makes me really happy to see. If you want more behind the scenes and knowing what's happening with the RPG Goblin outside of the podcast, please make sure to follow me on social media as well. I mainly use Threads and TikTok at the moment, which you can find me on both at the RPG Goblin. I like to spotlight a lot of games in much shorter videos there. I also like to show off what I'm reading, and I like to talk about TTRPGs there, so join the conversation. Also, just as a reminder, the RPG Goblin does have a Patreon. And if you would like to see this show continue and you like what we're doing here with introducing people to new TTRPGs, please make sure to go support it if you can. It's only $5 a month for the lowest tier, and that will get you access to the RPG Goblin Discord server along with monthly TTRPG parties where we will have guests, giveaways, and generally awesome TTRPG conversations since you can ask questions and, yeah, just have a really good time. The first party is going to be at the end of February, and I'm really, really excited for it. So if you want to know what that party is going to have in it, please make sure to follow the RPG Goblin on social media. Now, I appreciate all the support towards this show, whether it be through listening, following along with the podcast, or going and becoming a patron. It all means the world to me, and I want to thank you so, so very much. Absolutely. It's so cute. Like, as a frog, you could be able to jump up on the walls or jump really long distances and things like that. And it's just those little details on ways that you can interpret the powers that make this game so interesting and so fun and very makes the obstacles that whoever is running the game as the GM, so many different ways to actually solve them. Makes it so there's different ways to solve them. And it's not just, oh yeah, we're going on, here's what my players can do with attack and bonus action and stuff like that. They can literally do anything they want within some reasons, but they can do anything they want based on this class and a few wizard spells. And they will be able to figure out the obstacle and they will do it in goofy and wacky ways and it will be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And there's also, I'm sure we'll get it, but there are a couple different types of magic even within the magic mm-hmm. that your class grants you, and that is that's like the wizarding magic and the wild magic.
Yes, which the wizarding magic is basically the magic that the actual wizards have, and wild magic is pretty much everything else, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, I just if anyone's played like Honey Heist before, it kind of almost has that idea behind it where it's two kind of conflicting stats and magics or whatever that go against each other as you're playing the game, which makes it even more wild to play. What were you gonna say? Sorry.
I was just gonna say that the wild magic refers to like any sort of significant use of power, so it doesn't even have to be a spell in the traditional sense. It's just like you are using a great deal of power to figure out how to address this situation at hand.
Exactly, because there is I 100% agree, because there is one where it's muscle magic,
mm-hmm.
which is basically just using like your might and things like that to solve problems, but that's its own form of the wild magic. Even though it's not technically magic, you are still using yourself, who is powerful, to overcome the obstacles, like Odin said. Which, again, is also one that I really like, because it's your spells include incredible feats of punching, a yell like a sonic boom, and any other WWE-type nonsense. I just love the actual PDF for this book. The game, how it like lays out all of its classes and like the little commentary it has is so great. It's so amazing. Cause it just has little like quips at the end, and it's got little drawings on it as well that like shows kind of the different classes as pretending to be wizards. It's so fun.
Yeah, it is a beautifully designed book.
It really
it's
is
a lot
absolutely
of fun.
Amazing. And I don't know exactly how much it is, but I don't think it's a lot. And I ended up getting
less
mine,
than $5, I believe.
Less than $5, perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super affordable, super easy to play. I ended up getting mine in an itch.io bundle that I didn't even realize that I had it until like a year later when I was looking through. So it's super, super easy to get, super fun. If you want to try it out, it's very accessible. Do you know what the username of the creator is?
H.T. Elliott Art.
H.T. Elliott Art. Perfect. Yes. And
or Elliot
he's on
H.T. Art.
Yeah, and they're on itch.io, and they sell their games and stuff. I know they have definitely Wizards. I don't know if they have anything else. But definitely Wizards is at least worth it itself. But yeah, a little off topic there, but, you know, plug the book because it's fantastic. You should get it because it's great. Perfect for one shots. But you have your classes, and everyone at the beginning essentially picks a class. Usually you want everyone to have separate classes, or you can double up if you're going to take them in different directions, but it's not necessarily recommended just because it will get too similar. But you can also essentially make your own custom classes. And I was wondering if you have maybe thought about some of the options that you could do as custom classes, since you've done a lot of modules and doing supplements and stuff for TTRPGs.
Yeah, I've thought about it, but haven't specifically made one for definitely Wizards. But I have been thinking a lot about running the sort of base of definitely Wizards in other systems. So running the Wizard Beam practical exam in D&D. and stuff like that, and not allowing people to be wizards or skewing their magic somehow, which has been a lot of fun to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, I actually have a thing, I have a D&D session that's going to be coming up where I decided to kind of take inspiration from this book and do sort of a trial type thing, where my players will be going through about 3-4 chambers, and each of them will have obstacles and different challenges to overcome and all of that, and it's being run in D&D. And I'm not necessarily taking the full thing from Definitely Wizards. I do have some magic casters, and they're probably going to end up doing their magic, but I'm taking just the base idea of the chambers and the challenges and all of that, and interpreting it into D&D, which is been really, really fun, because there's so many different things that you can do. And we'll be talking about kind of the recommendations and the ideas that they already have within the book itself that are really great. And it just is such a, it just inspires a lot of creativity and inspiration, honestly, at least for me. I think it's so fun.
Definitely.
But yeah, they actually, even in the book, they mention even importing characters from from other games into this game. So if you wanted to kind of do the opposite, be like, oh, I'm playing D&D, but I want to do a trial like this, but I want it to be like Definitely Wizards, you can import those characters into this game and just figure it out, which I think is also really fun.
Yeah, and it's definitely in the spirit of like DIY as a genre of creation, just to do whatever you want and like make things out of nothing.
Exactly. It's just you're goofing off and pretending to be wizards. What more could you want?
Exactly.
But yeah, so after you've kind of picked your class and you figure out what you want to play, there are also props in this game. And I would love for you to tell everyone what the props are and what they are used for.
Yeah, so props are things that you get when you are building out your character. And it is a thing that you can use during the game. So not only do you get to have this item, but it also contributes to the game, where if you utilize a prop in some way, you can add a point to one of your magic scores that you have. And there is a table of 12 different props that you can possibly have. You roll a die for each column that you want, and some of them are like a pointy hat and ropes, or a long fake beard, or a costume quality amulet, things like that. The pocket full of glitter. It just makes you think about how you are playing and what you are sort of doing in the game, and like using your surroundings to best benefit your playstyle.
Absolutely. And it also, part of the flavor around the props is that they are also like your wizarding disguise as well. Like, so that's why it's like the pointy hat and robes, a long fake beard, a massive tome. Like, it's to even further the idea that you are a wizard. You are dressing up as a wizard. You are pretending to be a wizard. And they actually, that's why I love it so much, is that they do actually have use within the game itself. It's not just flavor. It's not, oh, I like this idea and this is what my character is going to look like. There is that to it as well, that it gives the flavor, but then it does have mechanical value as well, which sounds weird to say for this game because it's so rules light. but it does have use within the game. Yeah, so that is basically, you know, choosing the class, your wizard prop, and all of that is pretty much all there is to character creation within this game. Basically just two decisions and you're good to go. Since you've definitely gone through the game a little bit more than I have recently, would you like to talk more in depth about the wizard versus wild magic and how that works while you are playing the game?
Yeah, for sure. So if you were a real wizard, you would have access to a lot of different types of magic. But in this game, you aren't. So you only know how to do sort of some low-grade spells, some simple things. They describe a bunch of different kinds of spells that you can do in the book, but you can also sort of make stuff up as long as you are sort of following in line with the world of Definitely Wizards. Mm-hmm. And you're able to sort of build your character and your play style based on the type of magic that you do. So in this game, there are two types of immediate magic that we've talked about a little bit that we're going to get into now. So there is the wizard magic, or wizard spells, and wild magic, or wild spells. And in this game, you have two stats. You have your wizard and your wild. And your wizard refers to your ability to blend in and do wizardly stuff. whereas your wild is your natural talents and abilities and how conspicuous they are. And your stats change as you play through the game, but you start with 3 points in each stat. Once your stats go up or down, different things can happen. So when you succeed on a spell by rolling some dice, you add points to your stats, wizard and wild, depending on if you succeeded or failed. And once your wizard stat reaches 6, your wild magic threatens to explode, and you can't do any wizard spells until you've done a wild roll, at which point your wizard spells reset to 2. And the same thing sort of happens if your wild stat reaches 6, you start to draw suspicion and you can't cast any wild spells until you've successfully rolled on a wizard spell. If your wild stat goes higher than 6, or if your entire party's wild stat reaches 6 simultaneously, you're caught and you fail the test and you're arrested for wild magic crimes.
Which is the bad ending.
That is the bad ending. But if you make it through the whole game and you make it through all the chambers without your wild magic being detected, you win and you get your wizarding certificate. nothing is a spell in a traditional sense, really. It's all sort of magic that you are making up as you go along. It's just a very cool little system for sort of doing a pass-fail adventure.
It really is. And for all of the stats as well, the only die that you roll is a d6. So it's also very minimum on all the things that you need to actually play the game. You just really need a group of people, some d6s. Even just one d6 would probably be fine. And the ability to have fun. But I love the way that they do the tug between the wizard and the wild stats within the game, because if you succeed on a wizard stat, you get If you succeed on a wizard roll, your wizard goes higher because you're, you know, doing really good as being a wizard. But if you succeed on wild, your wild goes higher, and it'll go back and forth. And one thing that I really, really like is the fact that if you fail on wizard rolls, there is a really high chance that you will be adding to your wild stat, which shows that your like natural abilities and your natural talents are showing through, which makes it more likely for you to get caught. Though there is also a small chance that nothing will happen at all if you fail. Your spell just won't go off. But it also rewards bonus points. I should say quote unquote bonus points in this game when you're using wild, which I particularly like, which is basically if you are using a wild spell to, if you're using a wild spell, you don't want it to seem like you're using wild magic. You want it to seem like you're using wizarding magic because this is supposed to be a wizarding exam. And so when you use a wild spell, they encourage you to describe what your character is doing and saying to actually make it seem like wizarding magic instead of whatever kind of magic you actually can do. So my favorite example within the book is a character with elemental blood might yell, I cast levitate, and then use earth magic to move the rock beneath them to actually make them go within the air. So it's little things like that to actually make it seem like you're being a wizard, even if you're not. It gives that flavor, and it gives kind of the buy-in for everyone that they have to explain the way that they are being a wizard, which I think is super, super fun.
Yeah, and that's like definitely where the like collaborative storytelling narrative that you are sort of making up comes in, and like the force, the way it forces creativity amongst your party, which I think is a great exercise.
It really is, because I mean, if you are in a room with, I mean, this is taking from the module that you did a little bit. If you're in a room that is full of a bunch of parkour platforms and you just have the base abilities that you can do and a few minor wizard spells, there's so many possibilities. Work as a group and figure it out. You can even work one at a time to test things out, but there's so many possibilities to just collaborate together and see what you can do. It's so, so fun. Again, I want to run this so bad. I haven't had a chance to. I wanted to before we did this episode, but life's just been super busy. Mm-hmm. And now that I actually have Odin's module for this game, and I've read through the actual game again, it just reignites that urge to play again because it's so cool. Mm-hmm. And as we're talking about stats, the wizard versus the wild, there are actually the only thing that's really quote unquote concrete within this game. When it comes to spells, are the wizard spells that you get access to, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there is like a small list of them within the book, and those are basically the only proper wizard spells that you can cast, and those will be the spells that if you are rolling wizard, it's rolling wizard for one of these spells. It's not rolling wizard for a wild magic spell or anything like that. It's just for the wizard spells. Though if you would like to say a few of the wizard spells, go ahead, because I think they are quite fun.
Yeah, so you have a lot of different things. You have like simple things like frost nip, where you can shoot a beam of cold air at your enemies, making them chilly. Or singe, which where you produce a small flame, like a little built-in lighter on your body. But then there's also things like harm, where you can hurl a tiny ball of magic force at someone, like a little firework, or a simple illusion that makes something look like something else. There's also fun stuff like transmogrify, which turns a small amount of non-magical material into a slightly different non-magical material.
I love the wording for these things so much.
It's so good. or slime. You conjure a ball of goop. Gross.
So useful. I have been in many situations where just conjuring a ball of goop will solve most of my problems. So, exactly. I mean, this is just realistic. But, it's like, great. these spells, because of also how they're worded, they're... are so many possibilities with what you can do. It's mm-hmm. not like D&D where it tells you all of the rules and the specifications of the spell. There's like, you know, it only works against humanoids and it has this range and all of that. These are just, this is what it does. Have fun.
Yeah.
And one that I actually do like is hunch. You sort of get a sense for what someone else is thinking or get a hint at what to do next, which mm-hmm. I think is kind of a goofy one where it's like, I need some help.
Yeah. And it lets your DM play into it as well and figure out like what can we give these characters right now to make their play more fun.
Exactly. And with being in a wizarding exam, people are definitely going to be watching and people have to be observing. So and you mentioned this within your module as well, is that you can have whoever is observing be commenting during the play, or you could have kind of some NPC like interactions in that way where it might not even be giving hints until they do something like using the hunch spell. But it could just be giving something fun for the DM to do, to kind of be teasing the players or be luring them in certain directions and things like that, which I think is fun.
Yeah. It gives you so much flexibility to just have a good time.
It really does. Again, such a great one shot. What else they have, these aren't spells, but these are ways that you can, these are different things that you can do within the game, which is costuming, which is like using mm-hmm. your wizard prop, like we were mentioning earlier, for your advantage to basically give 1 point to wizard or wild. Correct me if I am wrong. I don't know why it's not clicking fully for me. Is it switching between the two? So let's say you have three in each. And if you cast, let's say, a wizard spell and you add one to wizard, does that take away one from wild, or does that keep no. wild at three and then wizard at four?
Yes, the second one.
Okay. Okay. Because I know that I think Honey Heist does the back and forth like that, maybe? There's something that did the back and forth like that. And I wasn't sure if this one did it for sure. And so that, all right, good to know.
Yeah.
Which then keeps it very risky on casting anything with wild, because there are so many opportunities for that to go just crazy. Come up.
Yeah.
Isn't there something that's like, you can actually kind of reset? Oh yeah. If your wild stat reaches six, you draw suspicion. You cannot cast any wild spells until you've succeeded on a wizard roll. Then your wild stat resets to two. So there mm-hmm. are ways that if you do reach the max, it will reset it, which I think is super handy and lets it last a lot longer. Because that was my one concern with if it would be both of them going up at the same time like that, is it could make the game very short if, you know, a series of yeah. bad rolls happen. But that's good that they have it. They have ways that it can get reset back down.
Yeah.
There's also wit bonus, which is a really fun one, where you can actually even bring in the NPC interactions, like we were saying, where you can reward players for attempting something funny or clever or fun, and essentially allow them to roll an extra die and choose the result that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's cover, which is where collaborative nature comes in. When a party member fails a spell, instead of facing consequences, you can cause a distraction. They don't face any consequences, and you add plus one to your wild. So basically, you're like, you know, look at me, don't look at them, as they're like casting something, and that's gonna go super wrong. But you can kind of take the blame for it, or at least have all eyes on you and cause yourself to be more suspicious, but it causes the other person to be able to succeed. Or yeah, not succeed, but, you know, be overlooked.
Not fail, yeah.
Exactly, which I think, and there's not really any limit or anything to how much these can be used. It's just if you find a moment that it would really work, or it would be really fun, use it. Have fun. We're having a great time here. If you can find a way to use a wizarding hat and ropes, go ahead to your advantage for magic. Go for it.
Yeah, and it's not really like an initiative based turn order for this. You mm-hmm. just kind of play and go through the motions, which also is really interesting when you're thinking about like applying a D&D system to this game, because mm-hmm. it just is like changing the play style at a sort of fundamental level all around.
Absolutely. And I've only played Monster of the Week as my only non-D&D system so far, and that is a system where there's no initiative. It's just sharing the spotlight and going in between each player. It's something that can take a little bit of trial and error of learning and making sure everyone's got enough time and have the moments to actually, you know, shine and do what they want to do, but you kind of almost form a natural initiative and kind of go off of reactions and like what would follow next. It's very fun to actually play that way. And it would be really interesting to try and do this within D&D.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's basically all of the things that you can do in the game. You know, you cast wild spells, you cast wizard spells, you can help your friends. The GM can award you and you can use your costume. It's great. So many opportunities, so many things.
Mm-hmm.
But then it goes into setup, which is the stuff that the GM is going to be doing. And because you've done your module, I would love to know how helpful you found the information within the base game for creating your module and creating like a, you know, exam around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was like, it was the whole book is pretty fundamental to the creation of the game. I took a lot from the book in my creation of stuff. Yeah, so I mean, the way that I approached it was basically the way that I approach writing any adventure, where I plan out the beginning, the middle, and the end, and how I want things to be going approximately. And there's so much in the book that is so great that you don't really need anything else to go with it. Like, you don't need a pre-written module. It makes setup super easy. But if you do want to write your own thing, you can pull together a lot of different stuff by just sort of thinking about different puzzles and problems that your players might want to solve. And the book even gives you good insight on different ideas for like whoever is proctoring the exam. If someone is proctoring the exam, the types of rooms that you are going to be going into, and then figuring out the obstacle for each room. And it was also really interesting because there's only so much prep you can do for this game, because your players are going to be doing so much creative thinking on their own.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's basically kind of the whole prep process for this game, from what I understand, is just really prepping the rooms and that's it.
It is, yeah. That's all you got to do.
Because there's not really anything, like, especially if you don't know what classes your characters are, your players are going to choose, or anything like that, you can't guess anything. You can't pre-plan anything that they're going to do. And it's more fun that way if you just leave it to, I figure out what's in this room, and then whatever happens when they get there is what will happen.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I like how they set up, you know, who's judging the test, the room type, main obstacle. I like the different ideas for the room type, which is like a natural cavern with no clear exit and several branching tunnels. Like, you can, there's a lot of different things that you can do within this game, because the rooms can really be anything that you want, as long as you think it would be fun to play through. And these, again, are just suggestions or ideas that if it, on the spot, you just want to come up with some rooms and come up with some chambers that you can just roll on these tables for.
Yeah, you don't have to prep anything if you don't want to.
Yeah, it's so, like, it's crazy how easy it would be to just pick this up, be like, all right, we're playing this today. And then as everyone's kind of getting set up and such, you're like, okay, I'm going to decide on who's going to judge the test and who they're going to, like, encounter first. And then it's like, all right, that's done. And then as soon as you get to the first room, you just roll that up right then and there, and then give them all the information. And then as they're solving, you might roll up the next room and get that ready. And it's actually really cool how streamlined it is for zero prep. You are just going off of the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And what I like as well is as you are going through the chambers, like you said earlier, they are getting progressively harder. Mm-hmm. So more challenges and different things are coming up, such as so after the first chamber. So the first chamber is pretty normal, just a normal challenge. And then after the first chamber, you can do the room is overgrown with vines that attempt to grab the players. The room has no gravity. The room is on fire. Things like that. And as you go on, there's different obstacles that kind of get harder and harder as you go. And what's great as well is on a lot of these tables, usually the sixth option is come up with your own or roll again twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's super fun. And as you were writing your module, what did you keep in mind when you were considering the additional challenges to add in the later chambers?
Yeah, I mean, I was referencing the book, like, constantly. I had the book right next to me as I was writing mine, just to make sure that my, like, Galen and challenge level was about equivalent to the rooms that were being made before. And I also was thinking about what would I want to be, like, fighting through. What do I think is fun to be playing with? I also was giving a lot of tips in my little module about, like, there should only be this many monsters at this amount of time. And here are some things that you could be throwing in if you want to. And figuring out sort of how to balance challenges with, like, introducing new factors and stuff like that. Like, these challenges in the book don't even necessarily include monsters that you have to fight. Like, you might be used to with things like D&D, but it just gives you so much room to play with the kind of flexibility that you want to have in designing a little adventure game.
Absolutely. And like you said, monsters aren't really a focus within this game. So if you are coming from something like D&D, where it's like big moments are usually with monsters, you know, in combats, fighting monsters. This is very centric on the obstacles and challenges that it provides, that you can have monsters in this game, but they are just another obstacle or challenge. They aren't a big, you know, combat or anything, because that's not how this game is really laid out.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be just, like, going back and forth, you know, hitting each other and all of that, because any combat, any, like, quote-unquote combat that you could come across within this game could easily be figured out and dealt with in non-violent and creative ways with your different powers and the different wizarding magics, and maybe even the stuff that is around you within the environment.
Mm-hmm. And which the is prompt another that fun... you got up right.
Exactly, the prompt... Not the... I'm so great at speaking. The prop that you bring can definitely aid you in that as well. And that's why I think if you are doing these rooms, I think a good thing to keep in mind is what elements within the environment can you bring to make the players think more outside of the box? What could you give them that will spark fun ideas? It can be like one example in the book is that there's like a river splitting the room in half. That's an environmental thing. And if you have someone who might have elemental based magic or even nature based magic, they could use that water. When if you didn't have that water in the room, they would have to come up with different ideas. It just gives different opportunities and different ways that people can just interpret the challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, so fun. I love this game. This game is great. Yeah. I really want to make a chamber for it because, again, like I said, I really, really want to run this game because it seems so, so fun. And again, it's so simple. And I love it. One thing that you did mention with the kind of keeping in mind the scale of the different chambers. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how much that does matter when you do play, because unlike D&D, this doesn't have like, you know, CR ratings for each creature. This doesn't have levels or anything like that. Everything's pretty abstract. And I do wonder if you could seemingly maybe create something that might be more overpowered. But when you get to the actual chamber, you could adjust it on the fly because everything is very abstract.
Yeah, I mean, and even with games like D&D and stuff, I am always open to altering things when I get to them.
Yes.
So even if I plan an encounter, like, if people aren't having fun, I'm going to end that encounter sooner than I planned. Or if people are having a great time, I'm going to give the monster more hit points. Maybe not everyone agrees with that, but I think that you should always be, like, listening to your players. And it's not a thing that you can do, that you should do all the time, but I keep that in mind whenever I'm running anything.
It's just to enhance the experience.
Exactly. So there's like a lot of different ways to approach it. And also thinking about, when I'm thinking about a system neutral module that I'm making, something that can be applied to any game, I'm thinking about the different ways that statistics and other game mechanics play into the way that this game is going to be played. Mm-hmm. And so when I was writing this, I was like, okay, so imagine this is a D&D game. I'm playing this in D&D. What do I need to prepare for to make it easiest for me to adapt this to a new system? And, mm-hmm. you know, someone could get knocked out in a room. You know, there's not inherent health points that you're dealing with, but like someone could fall off a thing and break their leg. And now we have to deal with that. You are kind of forced to think about the health of your players, like your player characters, because it's not something that is inherently designed into the playbook.
Yeah, which is definitely very interesting and provides its own challenges when thinking about putting this into, like, or bringing this into a different game like D&D. But I don't know, there's just so much potential. There really is. And because it is, I mean, just this game as it's written works by itself, but it is pretty general with the entire concept that it can be just taken and put into another game so easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's just then, just like you said, figuring out and having to keep in mind what the other systems bring to the table that you have to then keep in mind.
Yeah.
Crazy. Oh, I love it so much. Yeah, and that's pretty much all of the information and the stuff that you get for being a GM for creating the game is here's some sample and useful obstacles and chambers and rooms and all of this that you can use and take if you want. You can make up your own. You can do whatever. Just have fun with it. And yeah, just set up the chambers, and then you can run the game, and it will, you know, it will be just fine. You don't have to worry about prepping, you know, what if someone does this in this chamber? Don't worry about it. You'll come to it when you get to it, which I think is a great, yeah, it's a great exercise in if you want to get a little bit better at like on the spot thinking and improv in moments where it's like anything could happen. It's very fun to just like, you know, all right, I'm not going to have the control in the situation. The characters have the control as there are so many things that they can do. And they're just, you know, they're having fun with the environment that you created for them. And it's a fantastic time.
Yeah, it's a great game. It's just so fun.
It really is. Again, I love it so much. There's like, I think this one and there's another one called Junkyard Scrapbot that I think are my two favorite like indie small RPGs that I have found, because they just take a very specific idea and do it fantastic, which is my favorite thing when it comes to RPGs. Like if they can execute those ideas in a way that's like super understandable and super fun, chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. Yeah. I love it. One thing that I do want to mention is there are hacks at the end of this book, which essentially give you different ways that you can play the game. Things like importing characters, like we mentioned before, kind of doing the opposite of taking definitely wizards and putting it in another game. You can take characters from another game and put them within this game. And it's just, you know, figuring out which is the wild and which is the wizard stats, and what your character you're taking them from, what their class would be within this game. And again, you can make up your own custom classes, which would honestly be really easy because it's more so just a base concept idea and your magic can just come from whatever that is. There's like speed run, which is like putting a time limit on each of the chambers. Which if you really want to go ham and and do, if you're like really short on time as well for a one shot, that would be a really good idea to keep everyone on track. Boss rush, which is like essentially including everything that the players have killed in previous rooms, because you can do combat. Well, I shouldn't say combat. You can have monsters in the game and they can take them out. So you can bring those back in later, do like a boss rush, you know, big boss battle. Monster factory, which is just like creating really crazy enemies within the chambers. And it's got like little tables that you can do like an eyeball monster, T-Rex. And then it's got like things like hypnotizing and electrified or expanding. Competitive mode, where basically, you know, you're going up against other people, whether it be you are just one person going up against another person, or if it's like separate parties, which would actually be really, really fun if you did like a public game of this and you had two different tables that were doing games definitely wizard. Yeah, and they were doing it at the same time, and at the end they see like kind of who did it fat. Like they have certain things where it's like, I think in this is like hidden tokens that you can find, and then like as you like find them throughout, you then at the end can all meet together and compare, you know, how did you do versus how did you do, which I think is a really goofy and a really fun way to play as someone who has played quite a lot of public in-person games. Those can be fun, but doing like kind of a game mode like that where it is two groups of people already just enhances the experience.
Yeah, and one of the things that they even talk about for the final test is you defeating another group of wizards who are also taking the test, and that's another great way to do the competitive mode.
That would be crazy.
In other people, yeah.
Like you do the because you could either, I could see again, either going through the chambers as normal and then having at the very end, you know, you wait when both teams end, they then meet together and they face off, or you can have it gather tokens and maybe the end chamber isn't fighting against each other, but a bigger challenge that might have more rewarding tokens at the end, possibly, depending on how you do it. And then, you know, comparing, you know, the tokens against each other. Because I think those would be, like, too similar. Like, it, you would do, like, the same set of chambers for both groups versus the other one if you were going, let's say, a boss battle at the end with another group of players. I could see doing like two different kinds of chambers and then like having that be the end room. There's a lot of different ways that you could do it. And now I need that in my life. Cause again, I've played, I talked about this a little bit before. My first experience with playing D&D was in a public setting, and it was at first one shots that then turned into a campaign, which in my personal opinion, I don't think, unless you have guaranteed players that are going to be coming back, a campaign where people are leveling up and can go to really high levels isn't the best way to do a public game. But one shots are a fantastic way to do it. And this would be so, so fun to run as like an event for a public game. Like, we are going to be playing definitely wizards, where you play as people who are not wizards trying to compete a wizarding trial. And at the end, you're going to fight the other team. If you want to advertise it that way, or if you want to keep it a mystery and have two people going at the same time, there's so many different ways that you can do it. But this would be such a great game to do in a public setting of getting people into RPGs, because it's also really, really simple. You don't even need a character sheet. You can have just an index card that maybe has just base ideas on it. Like, oh, here's, you know, the base spells. You can have handouts, which I actually think they have that. They have little cards that you can print that have each of the classes on it that you can hand out around, and maybe just a page that has all the magic for everyone, and you're good to go.
Yeah, it's a great system.
It really is. And actually, I'm curious on this because two other things that they suggest in Hacks is a single player mode, where it is just you, or maybe if you want to play as a small group of players, you know, kind of writing down your experiences and how things happen, which I love when games have a solo mode to them, because I think it just opens up the options of who can play it, because not everyone can find groups, you know? But then there is a GM-less mode. And I'm curious from your perspective as someone who does modules, if you were to write a module for a GM-less mode of Definitely Wizards, how would you approach that?
I would say that like the way that they approach it in the book is a great way to approach it, by rotating who is running it. Or you could really sort of push the creativity and move into a space of almost just playing pretend, where you say, I want to fight this thing, so let's just do some improv and fight this thing. Or I want to solve this kind of puzzle, so let's build this puzzle so that we can get to the next room. But I think that the way that they have it described in the book as something where you each have a character. But sometimes the characters become sort of NPCs and you are a leader leading the chamber setup. That is like a really great way to do it. And also that, they allow any player to suggest the monsters in the room or the different like things that are, changing in the room, where then the person who is leading that room gets to make the final decision. I think that is a great way of approaching it.
That is a fantastic way of approaching it, and very collaborative in nature as well. And I think they even suggest that you guys can collaboratively like set up the different chambers. Yeah. So, you know, introduce the different challenges, and that can also be fun, especially in a way of, if you think of a really cool idea that would be really tricky and that would also maybe even work or contradict like other people's powers to make it really fun like that, do it. That would be so fun, because you get to all kind of have fun and I think it's more fun to introduce challenge for your fellow companions versus make like easy challenges for yourself, if that makes sense. which I think this kind of this form of playing the game with no GM has a lot of opportunity for that. And I'm sure that you could even play definitely Wizards with a GM, but also have your players play a bigger part. Totally. Sort of taking the idea how they do it with the GM-less mode, where people can still suggest things, and you are the person who is running the game. You have the final say, but you can add those things in. If it's like, oh man, that's a really good idea. Yeah, let's do that. Or this is how a monster reacts. Or someone's like, oh, I think maybe this monster might just like, you know, go back in the air and like hover like above us or something. Because I don't know, there's all kinds of things that could happen in this game. It's like, yeah, sure, that makes a lot of sense, and that would be really interesting, especially to just pose different challenges and stuff. Because, again, people have a lot of different ideas, and it's really great anytime that you can add in more of the collaborative nature to make things even more interesting.
Yes, totally. It's a great game for collaboration. I know we keep using that word, but it is the best word for it, I think.
It is. I mean, like, you just, if the shoe fits.
Yeah.
It's so good. But yeah, I mean, one thing that I will say from this book that I really enjoyed is they talk about, you know, when do you know when you're supposed to roll? With, like, the rules being pretty open and the challenges being like pretty abstract, like it can kind of be hard sometimes. Yeah. They give some really great advice of, you know, it's a good time to roll when the failure could be just as interesting as the success. Yeah. Like when there is like stakes within the failure and it can change something, that's when you should roll, which fantastic advice. Even if you're not going to play this game, just taking that to any game that you're going to play, if there is a big way that it will change something in the game, if you roll, then roll. If not, don't roll.
Exactly.
Because I think, at least personally, as a GM, there's times where I will be like, are they supposed to roll for this? Like, and like trying to figure that out. But if you kind of have the base idea in your head is of like, you know, if it will progress the story, if the failure will progress the story, it's a great time to roll. Which, again, yeah, I really like with the whole idea of failing forward, which Monster of the Week does. I mean, Monster of the Week, but any Powered by the Apocalypse game does really heavily. You can add, like, this takes the same exact mentality of failing forward. If it provides something interesting and if it pushes the story forward, absolutely roll, have fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's pretty much the base game. Do you have any final thoughts or comments you would like to add?
I don't think so. I think that is the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely Wizards, a fantastic indie RPG. Like I said, one of my favorites, if not my my top favorites. I would 100% recommend you checking it out. The name of the creator will be in the description, but the creator is Elliot HT Art on itch.io, I believe, as well on other social medias. So you can find them there, but the name will also be in the description of this episode. Please buy the book. Support the creator. It's great. Also, Odin's module will be up, and you should get that as well, because it's a short little module, but it's got so much information, and just from reading it myself, I got ideas for the D&D kind of wizarding exam that I'm planning on doing just from reading this book. I'm not taking any information, but just like put some things in perspective of like, oh yeah, that's actually really cool. So I 100% recommend getting Odin's book. Again, their social media will be in the description below, so that you can find them. And then the book will be on exactly what again?
My book is available through my website, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Kobo, Apple Books, Google Play Books. It's everywhere books are sold, pretty much.
And your module book will also be on your itch.io as well on your website too?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, so get their new book, their novel that's coming out, but also get their module book because both are fantastic, and support Odin because they're fantastic.
Thank you.
But yes, thank you again for coming on and talking with me about Definitely Wizards. Like I said, it's one of my favorite games, and just being able to talk with someone about it and be like, yes, it's so good.
Yeah,
absolutely great. Love it every time.
It was a pleasure.
Yay. Again, yeah, thank you for coming on, and thank you everyone who listened to this episode. I hope that you enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the RPG Goblin. It really means so much to me. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you followed the RPG Goblin on your favorite podcast platform and gave it a review. Thank you again to Odin for coming on and talking about Definitely Wizards with me. It was absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait to run your module. If you love Definitely Wizards and really want to get the game, I highly recommend that you do so. The creator's name will be in the description below, and the game is affordable and easy to play and perfect for one-shots. So I highly recommend it. Next episode will actually be a little bit different. The next episode of the RPG Goblin will be coming out Friday, April 14th, and this episode is going to be a little bit different, as it's actually going to be a solo episode with just me, and I'm going to be talking about why you should get into TTRPGs. This is obviously going to be a little bit different, but it is still going to be such a great episode, so I highly recommend checking it out when it does come out. Thank you again so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Huge thank you to all of the Patreon supporters and Kyle Addison for being our $20 patron who gets their name shouted out at the end. Thank you!